南无大慈大悲阿拉哈多萨摩萨摩布达斯，南无大慈大悲阿拉哈多萨摩萨摩布达斯，南无大慈大悲阿拉哈多。萨摩萨摩布达斯，堪蒂巴拉芒达波提提卡，尼玛那，巴拉芒瓦丹迪布达，那希巴巴吉托帕罗帕嘎蒂，那萨摩诺霍提帕朗维耶塔扬多。In this Dhammapada verse, it says, patience or tolerance, or sometimes translated as endurance, but patience is a more common translation for kanti, is the supreme, the highest austerity, or maybe simple terms means the highest tough training or toughness, tapa. Nibbana is the highest, the Buddha said. These are the two main things. Then the rest is saying that monk is a recluse. You don't go and create trouble to people and despise or offend others. But anyway, today we'll focus on Kanti Paramang Tapo Titika. Patience is the highest austerity. Tapa. You see, in India, people respect, naturally in India, they respect great sacrifice for spirituality. Anybody who live a very austere life, very thrifty, live on the minimum, and endure great hardship for the sake of truth, in search of truth, such an act is called tapa. And because of a linguistic, sometimes in this case, a tapo, it means the same thing. So tapa, even today, we find India, people like. So if they see us endure great difficulty, they respect. Naturally, even without knowing whether you are practicing the right teaching or not, but they admire the kind of a sincerity, sacrifice, endurance for the sake of truth seeking. So they practice tapa. And during the Buddha's time, a lot of these ascetics, they practice very hard life. Some are naked ascetic. Well, you know, naked ascetic is not easy. If it is during winter, rain, or whatever, you don't have a cloth on you. And then you have to endure people looking at you with different eyes or whatever. I have one Spanish friend. We practice in Pau together. He told me. He went to some of the deep ascetic area, somewhere around Rishikesh. So he saw the female, even the female naked ascetic, young one, with the whole naked walking on the road. People look at her, you're just normal. I've never seen naked ascetic, but normal. And to them, this is a training to be like Arahant, unshaken. And people admire, people respect, and never they respect. So like that. And I also, but I saw with my own eyes once, the temple beside Buddha Gaya, the Hindu temple beside Buddha Gaya. One time that was in year 2004, during, yes, 2004 Vasa time. They practice this ascetic, very strange, They bury themselves up to here for 7 days. You know, there's one, no, one, not day, one, only one single ascetic. He buried himself in front of the Hindu temple, you know, the Buddha Gaya, that's next to his Hindu temple. So, buried up to here. And then, for 7 days. For 7 days. I think he fast also. I think he didn't take any. And then, in a few days' times, grass grew up, you know, grass grew up here. To prove that he actually did not get up from it. And it was very tough, because at that kind of atmosphere, actually it's very tough. You know, even for us, if proper cover, we feel cold, and we feel not easy. Huh? The weather change, but he buried himself up to here. And this is the tapa ascetic. And, but I saw it as a kind of, not as a strength, but as a kind of weakness. Because he had to prove something to others. He had to prove that, you know, he had to make sure the grass grew up, and then, you know, to make sure that, you know, people, to prove to people that, you know, I didn't go anywhere, you know, I was a real one. But anyway, the Indian people love it so much. And then I also met one ascetic, you know, on my way of wandering, you know, all black clothing. And then his costume was very unique. You know? Different kind of ascetic in India. But this one is all wearing black. And he told me, through translator, he was 180 years old. But he looked like about 60 over plus only. So anyway, then he came out, he showed me with the newspaper cutting, then, you know. So, anyway, through the translator, I asked him, why you practice? He said he's supposed to have some psychic and whatever. Suppose, you know. And he also proved his case to me. Tried to convince me. I thought, very strange. You know, he practiced so high, suppose, you know. But you want to convince me to believe that you are so powerful or whatever. So I saw it as a kind of a weakness. It is not purity. And I asked him, for what reason you practice this, whatever, psyche, or your practice, like your spiritual training? For what reason you do that? Then through the translator, he said, I want to prove to the world that what they believe as impossible is actually possible. I said, well, I immediately felt, would I do the same just to prove to the people that, you know, for what is impossible is actually possible, just to prove. But if I have to endure all this hardship and training just to prove that, I think it's not necessary for your eyes only. You see? So I thought this is also not really a pure, not really. But anyway, I told him, I said, but for Buddhists, we are not practicing for heroism. We practice for very, very practical reason, for the cessation of suffering, for the overcoming of suffering only. And then he immediately told, yes, yes, I also do for that. I also do for that. Anyway, we have a very friendly talk. Huh? We have very friendly to each other. And we left. I left. So this, sometimes I look at this, the people practice all sorts of tapa. Do they have a clear comprehension of purpose? Do they have a clear comprehension of suitability? You know, what is your purpose of doing it? Is it suitable or not suitable? Is it beneficial? Life is so short, you know, and you do all these things and torture yourself and do all the hardship and for other people's eyes. And 2005, if I'm not mistaken, is that year. They have a big occasion in, I think, Allahabad, that town near Ganges River. That town. They have a very big group of 20,000 ascetic gather at the Ganges River. They say 12 years once, they have a big gathering. And then there is a kind of a big festival for ascetic. They have to prove who is greater, you know, ascetic, who is greater. So the greatest one will be allowed to go into the Ganges River to take bath first, you know, to wash first. Then the rest of people have to take the water, you know, when you wash, then there's, yeah, this new water, you see. And other people go down, is using the water other people already use. Very strange, you know. Then, for the sake of to proving who is bigger and greater, more powerful ascetic, this group of ascetic fight, you know, fought, and they fought. And, in that fight, one ascetic died. So it came out in a newspaper. So I was asking question, you know, for what reason? Do they know why they want to practice this hard training, austerity? You know? So, I'm not, of course you have to give due respect now for some, there are many good ascetics or good ascetics. You know, they are sincere to search for the truth. We should not simply, disregard or should have a despise all the ascetics just because of one or two person like that. There are also many people are sincere truth seeker. But we have to ask ourselves why we do this. But anyway, most people they do it with good understanding. Like for example, our Bodhisattva, he practiced tapa, this ascetic tough training. For the sake, because he sincerely believed in this way, he could exhaust his back karma, and when back karma exhausted, he could, the mind will have the power to see truth and he could get enlightened. So, all the previous Buddhas, at one time or another, they practiced tapa. And before they became enlightened, in the record of the history of all the Buddhas, it seems that all practice tapa at one time or another, so at least for 7 days. And our Prince Siddhartha practiced for 6 years because of some bad karma. The offense he committed against Kassapa Buddha. During Kassapa Buddha's time, he committed an offense by despising Kassapa Buddha before he actually realized how great Kassapa Buddha was. So he said, why should I learn from the bald-headed ascetic? So because of that kind of despise. So he had to, and there's reason why he ended up like that. So he had to practice for 6 years, asceticism. But anyway, the Bodhisattva practiced not for pride. The Bodhisattva practiced as a training. But still, it was a wrong practice. So eventually, all the Bodhisattva could only attain enlightenment by walking the middle path. But anyway, in this Kandi Paramang Tapo Titika, tapa is supposed to be like a sincere, austere training for in search of truth, not for show. But even that, the Buddha say, patience is a greatest austerity. So let's look at the two groups of ascetic when they fight, and whose master is a greater, who should go down first. So you see, they lose their patience. With all their training, they can endure so much hardship, they can put needle here and then come up here, they can train themselves this way, they can torture their body, they can do all kind of things. But they couldn't stand, you know, having other people supposed to be more superior than you or whatever it is, you know, to go into the water first. This kind of thing. So, it's actually not easy. And this one also was mentioned by Mahatma Gandhi. You know, he says, when Mahatma Gandhi was talking about fear, he says, you know, by some people may not fear death. Some people may not fear, you know, harm to themselves or whatever, you know, this. But they may fear the odium of the world. Odium means, in this case, that people look at you with their eyes, you know, look down, you know, disagree with you, you know, despise you, or have opposite consideration about you, negative opinion about you. So many people cannot take it. They cannot take it. They say, I can endure this, I can endure that, but I cannot take this. Some of my students also say, you know, they say, yes, you know, I can be, other people say bad about me, no problem, you know, but if my teacher, you know, disagree with me or disapprove me, I feel very, very bad. I cannot meditate. I say, that is exactly the point you have to overcome. You see or not? You see, Mara can find any weakness, you know, any point to dig it out and cause problem to you when you meditate, you know. Really? I have one student even told me, you know, please ordain me, Bhante. I said, okay, but, you know, it seems that you are not so ready for ordination. So, you are not so ready for ordination. I say, I am very friendly to you when you come to me, you know, as a devotee. But if you become my disciple, you know, I usually close disciple, I will give them tougher training. And he say, no problem, Bhante. You can beat me, you can scold me, you can do anything. No problem, you can beat me, you know. Then I look at him, he's so big size, you know. How can I beat you, you know? I beat you, my hands also will get painful, you know. It's too strong. But he said, no, but anyway, his sincerity, show his sincerity, you can beat me, you know. I will listen to you, I will be obedient. But later, after some time, where I did not fulfill his whims and fancies only, I got so disappointed, so bad feeling, and he disrobed. You see or not? But of course, the teacher cannot all the way, you know, follow the student's whims and fancies. Right? This role, just for a simple reason, you know, things like that, the teacher not satisfying my wish. The teacher cannot be satisfying the wish of the students all the time, you know. The teacher teach according to the teacher's wisdom, not according to the ignorance and whims and fancies of the students. So things like that, you know, you can endure, you can say, I can endure pain, you can beat me, you can do, but you may not be able to stand that little thing, you know. So what is the purpose of this tapa? You know, people supposed to practice austerity to search for truth, to purify themselves, to achieve nirvana. But even though it's a wrong method, but people do it with that intention, supposedly. But now, if you can take all this training, then you are willing to put so high stake, you know, whatever, sacrifice so much for the sake of truth, then that means that small things should not be disturbing you. But strange, small things disturb. You know, people practice, sometimes they can sacrifice so much just to ordain, let go so much, to become monks and become nuns. But small things, they get disturbed. So what I told them is, sometimes you let go of the whole world and you cannot, you still keep a little sand in your heart. That make you pain. So painful. So, you see, how difficult it is to endure, to tolerate. But actually, when we talk about Kanti, it doesn't mean only endure the bad things, you know. It also, actually the word also involves enduring temptations, you know, good things that attract you and hold you. So you have to overcome, practice endurance to resist the arising of anger and also greed. But most of the time, in the Jataka story or whatever, when we talk about Kanti, we always talk about the negative, painful side. Because the good one is possible to overcome, but the painful one is more difficult to overcome. Anyway, so in the Jataka story, when the Buddha talked about Kanti, of the experience of the Bodhisattva, the most famous one is Kandivali. When he was an ascetic, he practiced, at one time he went to the palace backyard. They have a very beautiful garden, you know. But those days, they don't have fence, it's open, anybody can just come in. So the ascetic, they go there and meditate. And then one fine day, this king brought all the harem, his women, play around. Let's go to the garden to play around. Then when they saw the dancing, everything, then the king got tired and fell asleep on the lap of one of the women, the harem woman. Then the rest say, well, see, we dance for the king to see. If the king is sleeping, no, well, we might as well enjoy ourselves, play around in the garden. So they spotted the ascetic, the bodhisattva. So then they crowd around and listen to the Bodhisattvas explaining about Dhamma. So then this king woke up. Ah, what happened? What happened? All the my woman all gone. Then they say, what happened? Then he discover all the women go to went to crowd around the Bodhisattva, the ascetic, and listen to Dhamma. Then he got very jealous. You see the king, they always want the full attention on themselves. You see, this is the problem of people. You think he's happy? He's in fact, I think he place his happiness in the in other people. You see, the more you rely on outside for happiness, the easier your happiness gets shattered. So this is exactly what happened to that king. So his happiness was shattered, because now another man, got all the attention. So he was very angry. He came to the Bodhisattva, what are you preaching? What are you practicing? I'm practicing Kanti, patience. I'm teaching patience. Yes, patience. Okay, come. Cut off hands, limbs, one by one. Every time after cutting one, ask, what do you practice? And then the Bodhisattva has to tell the truth. Well, I practice patience. I teach patience. Patience is not here. Patience is not in the nose, in the ears. So eventually cut nose and cut ears and cut limbs, Still the Bodhisattva say, I practice patience. No, then he got it. He gave him a kick, He told the people to cut. Then eventually he couldn't make the Bodhisattva got angry. Bodhisattva was patient, calmly enduring it, but without getting angry, without hating the king. So then the king left. When the king left, beyond the vision, the eyesight of the Bodhisattva, then he fell into the hell, went into the ground, like that. But anyway, that was an extreme case for our Kandi. So you may think that, well, we are not going to be Bodhisattva, maybe. Some of you say, oh, I'm not going to be Bodhisattva, I'm not going to practice up to that level, it's too tough for me. But anyway, in our whole daily life, even if you don't practice patience up to that level, but still in our life, there's a lot of occasions we need to practice patience. Why we have to practice patience? What happens if we don't practice patience? What are the advantages we practice patience? What are the disadvantages, when we don't practice patience? Anybody can share, brothers and sisters? How? I'm sure you have some experience, sometimes you spoil the relationship because of impatience, right or not? Because of scolding somebody, because of showing your agitation. I don't know, in the workplace, if your boss, you get angry with the wrong person, very difficult, huh? But you see our Sakka, we practice patience very differently. The king, Ti Gong, the Sakka. When at one time the Asura king was caught in front, in the palace, tied up in front. And the Asura king, even when he was caught, he keep accusing, insulting the king Sakka. The king Sakka was patient, calmly. Then one of the Deva asked the king Sakka, why you want to endure, patient? You can just give him a slap or give him a big lesson. He's caught here. He's a prisoner here. Then the king Sakka say, I'm practicing patience. If I practice patience towards my superior, maybe out of fear of a punishment or the superior going to retaliate, maybe because out of fear that I endure and practice patience. Such a patient is not superior. If I practice patience towards my peers, peers, peers are, we are quite equal. They have ability to take revenge. And because of fear of revenge, I may endure and practice patience. But now, on inferior, this person is weaker. I'm on a higher position. I can do anything I want to do to him. And yet, out of respect for this Dhamma, for this patience quality, I practice patience. So this is a real patience and higher patience. I want to practice this type of patience. So King Sasaka answered like that. So when I read this, I was, this is a puzzle. Patience must be something very beautiful, very wonderful quality. It must be very advantageous. Otherwise, why King Sakya wanted to practice patience to such a high degree, you know, to your inferior, to the weaker party? It is very wonderful. If you understand patience, it is very wonderful. It is the practice which turns rubbish into gold. You know? You know why it turns rubbish into gold? It is just like now we have some people are making lots of millions of money by collecting rubbish, you know, reprocessing the rubbish, something like that, you know, and turn into diamond and gold and produce great wealth. Why? Because when we endure, it means that now I'm referring to this aspect of patience, like, which is a more common aspect of patience, which endure the negative or unpleasant object. Enduring the patient of pleasant object, this one we don't spend for today's talk. We want to focus more on unpleasant object. So when unpleasant object happen to us, it's always a vipaka. In many ways, things can be unpleasant. In one is that object is naturally unpleasant. You know, like you see, you know, people give you a cut, you know, take a knife and cut. Definitely that's painful. Yeah? This is definitely unwholesome result. But certain things is not by nature unwholesome, but because of karma, you will perceive it to be painful experience. For example, sometimes you just meet some people or you get something. Other people will feel, well, this is no problem. You know, it is good. It is nice. And this weather is good. This condition is okay. But for you, it is horrible. It is hell. Then, sometimes it's because of karma. Sometimes also because of lack of virtues. Because this kind of object always arouses ayoniso manasikara, unwise attention. Somehow this kind of object, we just want to look at it and feel bad about it. Even though all other people are okay with it, but you just don't feel okay with it. Sometimes it's also because of some karmic influence, karma. Then we tend to take a neutral object as an unpleasant object. This can also happen this way. But whatever it is, when we perceive anything to be unpleasant, some kind of a past influence are there. Sometimes it's directly because of bad karma. You come to that. Or bad karma ripening. It can be. So if we, in the case of bad karma ripening, that make us experience unpleasant object, so when it ripens, what does it mean? This karma is getting exhausted. This bad karma is getting exhausted. So when we endure, we are clearing our rubbish of bad karma. Bad karma, I consider this like rubbish. You are clearing this rubbish. Is it good to clear rubbish? People practice tapa. They go all the way to torture themselves to clear the rubbish. And yet it may not be actually clearing, you know. Sometimes maybe some, like our Bodhisattva, is kind of sort of clearing the rubbish. But some are not, you know. They are creating new unwholesome things because of wrong view. Wrong understanding, thinking this way, you can exhaust your karma. May not be so. May be so, but may not be so. Most of cases are not. Because the karma ripen, it doesn't depend on you want to make it ripen. You know, so when you torture yourself, it doesn't mean you always make your bad karma ripen, you see. More likely is that now the present act of stupidity, you do the wrong thing to yourself and inflict the pain to yourself, it is immediate result of inflicting pain, you get the pain. So it's not really that you exhaust the bad karma is still there. But now,
This opportunity of exhausting the karma present to you without yourself looking for it. Right or not? So it presents itself and help people go all the way, practice all the hardship, self-mortification, to exhaust with the intention to exhaust the karma, and yet may not have exhausted their karma, bad karma. And now you don't make any effort for it, and this opportunity presents itself to you. How nice it is. So exhaust the bad karma, rubbish is gone. And at the same time, when you practice Kanti, what happened? When bad things are happening, provocation are happening to you, you're supposed to get angry, supposed to get sad or low kind of unwholesome state of mind, usually supposed to be aroused. But now because of a Kanti practice, you can resist that. What happened to our mind? Adosa Chetasika developed in a very unique way. Adosa Chetasika. Very unique way. You see, if you don't get angry because of no provocation, nothing happened to you, you also have adosa cetasika. This kind of adosa cetasika is not that powerful. Just because you don't have to find the occasion unpleasant which provoke or stimulate the unwholesome state to arise. But now, you are under challenge. You are under challenge. In ordinary situation, you're supposed to any ordinary people supposed to get angry already. Are likely to get angry. And now because of Kanti training, we endure. This Adosa Chetasika is very unique. It comes with powerful ability. And then it comes with, and very often with the wisdom. So, this Adosa Chetasika is very useful, very helpful. When the mind arises and passes away, the energy left behind in our mind, the potency, is very useful. In future, whenever you find such a challenge, situation, which can disrupt your life, with things, and because of this training, this program that you have, don't get pulled down. So this is what? This is punya. This is a merit. And if you practice it without the sense of a wrong view, without the wrong view, without pride, and without the craving for anything, with a purity and with understanding, and you direct your practice towards Nibbana, hopefully this be a supporting condition for the realization of Nibbana, then this punya turns into parami. Parami is very unique. When you have a punya, this punya merits will produce a good result in the rounds of samsara. But parami are unique. Parami are the punya which facilitate our journey towards liberation, towards the realization of Buddhahood, Paccika Buddhahood, or Arahantship. To be liberated from the rounds of birth and death. So this kind of merit we call parami. So, now what happened? When bad things happen to you, when you practice patience, on one hand, let's say now your karma is on this level. Now, your merit this one, this level, and this bad karma, this level. But now when bad things happen, you exhaust your bad karma already by enduring. But because of this endurance, adosa cetasika, non-hatred quality develop very strongly. So you become the kanti parami. Go up. So your life, the bad thing go down and bright thing, positive thing go up. So how wonderful it is. So this I call it gold, and this I call it rubbish. You're turning rubbish to gold. Something like that. So, you see, when you want to perform dana, you have to work very hard to perform dana. You see or not? You have to go and cook for the bante and do this and do this. You have to sacrifice and you have to give up some money. You know, some wealth, just to complete it, you know. But now this is different, you know. This opportunity presents itself to you without yourself searching for it, you know. Some, of course, some miserable person must be doing the job, you know. Of course, but sometimes it's because of weather or whatever. And sometimes need not be human or need not be any beings, but more likely, most of the time when we endure, is caused by human being. Other people, unmindful one, unwise one, they do the good job for us, you know? And thank the person for doing a good job for you. You see, even your wise teacher may not want to do this for you. You see, at one time when I in the Sangha, I had some bad karma ripening. Other people are reacting to my karma. I noticed that. Except my teacher, Bhante Aryananda, Bhante Aryadhamma. They were very steady. They look at me with lots of love and compassion. That just don't get shaken. They just don't respond to your bad karma. Other people's bad karma respond to your bad karma. They gave me a shower of a lot of love. That was wonderful. Other people who are not mindful, when your karma ripen very strongly, bad one ripen, people respond to our karma if they are not mindful. But the mindful one, the wise one, they won't do that job for you. They won't help you to exhaust your bad karma. You know, they don't do that. So, even a loving person for you may not do the job for you. Only the ignorant one, the unwise one, the unmindful one, they would do this job of clearing the rubbish for you. You know, the wise one, they won't go into your cesspit to clear up for you. You know, only the unmindful one, the unfortunate one, karma not so good, they do the dirty job for us only. So when these people, miserable people, doing the dirty job for us, thank the person. Oh, thank the person. In fact, sometimes I feel sorry. Sometimes I feel sorry. Oh, this person have to do this job for me and help me to clear up my stock of rubbish. So, never mind. So, sometimes I feel so sorry about that. Yeah, like that. So, if you understand, this is a very unique parami. Out of the 10 parami of the Bodhisattva, this is a very unique parami. This is a parami that you don't, all other parami you have to search for the occasion, you have to do this and do that, do this and do that, to fulfill it. This parami, you just do nothing. Just stay down there, just let it pass. And then you already get fulfill your parami. So, isn't it wonderful? Yes. So this is Khandi. Now, that be having said, the benefit of this patience, how to practice. Now I need your cooperation. How to practice? If we apply the methodology of the Buddha, what is the methodology of the Buddha? You remember? Last time I shared with you? In solving any human problem or striving for any goal or any ideal. You remember the methodology of the Buddha? First, identify the problem. Second, identify the origin of the problem. Third, identify the goal, the aim you want to achieve. If you don't even know what you want to achieve, then there's no point talking about making effort. Then the fourth, find the causes, the method to achieve the goal. It's actually Four Noble Truths, right? I think the Buddhist methodology is very useful for the world, whether it is on international level or any of the international issues or big. I find this method is always applicable. You can start with the goal you want, you can start with the problem, you can start with the origin of anything. But whatever it is, as you fulfill the four, you get a very clear picture of the issues. Two sets of cause and effect, you see? Problem and the original problem and the your idea, the goal, and the method to achieve the goal. So now, I need your cooperation. When we want to practice patience, we have how to practice, which is the fourth, the method. Right? But you need to help to fulfill the other three. Yes.
I have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we are not straight away. Come from heaven.
Mm-hmm. You see, if you have a real case like this, first of all, according to the Buddha's methodology, if you want to solve the problem, you have to solve it with what? what kind of mind quality we need to use to solve any problem in the world. Do you know that? What are the mental qualities that is helpful for our solving of any problem? Do you know what are the qualities of mind that is helpful for you to solve any problem in life? Okay, what else? No, no. What else? Equanimity, what else? I want to get the most important factor. Yeah, all right, yeah, yeah, right, yeah, right. What else? Okay, I'm still waiting for the answer, the most powerful answer. Wisdom. Without, if the wisdom cannot function, then it's difficult to solve any problem at all in the world. Wisdom. That's why the Buddha, all his teaching is about, you know, you can have dana, sila, bhava, anything. It's all about bringing up wisdom so that we can solve our problem. Right or not? Okay. So if you want to solve a problem with wisdom, what should you do? What should you do? Okay, thank you, brother. Thank you for sharing. This is also a good point. And but first of all, you must know what are the factors that obstruct the operation of wisdom, right? You know, before you want to make a path to anywhere, you know, you must know what are the things that obstruct you. If you don't know the obstacle, then you can't even do anything. So what obstruct you, right? So what are the obstacles for the operation of wisdom? Do you know? Anything? Yes, yes. Defilements. What else? Bad karma. Not necessary, you know. Some people even when back, you know, when back, if like Bodhisattva, you're very unique, even when bad karma ripen very strongly, the wisdom went never without, couldn't feel. So you have to remove factors which disrupt the operation of wisdom. So we have a Dharma leadership principle in our organization. In our organization is whenever we have a meeting, you know, we make sure that everyone know the Dharma leadership principle. One of the rule, you can see it, you can find that rule in our constitution, MDS constitution or DECOM constitution. Which means, if you are emotional, you have no right of speech. Very strange. Huh? People say, are we not having free right to free speech? Yes. But if you are in a leadership position, you know, in the leading position, in a meeting or whatever, you are supposed to bring up the wisdom. What's the purpose of meeting? You know, to bring up the wisdom, collective wisdom. But if you cannot, the wisdom cannot operate. Then no point having a meeting. Isn't it so? So if people fight in the parliament, you know, people fight in the parliament. So how can they lead the country? They cannot do anything. Because even though you may be very intelligent person, IQ 200 like Einstein, you know, Albert Einstein, but still you cannot function when you get emotional. So you have to do away with, one, emotions. Emotional, whether it's a strong or a low, is a matter of degree. But according to our Buddha's teaching, the emotion and wisdom cannot exist at the same mind moment, which is very clearly. So if you want to solve your problem, even the slight emotions also will affect the solving of it. Because you have to wait for the wisdom to arise in. You know, why is it important to use wisdom to solve problem? Because only with wisdom, we can apply the Buddha's methodology. You see or not? If you are not able to apply Buddha's methodology, then there's no way to solve problem. You see or not? It's not about respect to me. Respect to me may not, yeah, it's one plus point, so that we are in good, friendly conversation, you see. But now we are talking about operation of wisdom, you see. So when you want to let your wisdom functions, so you must create a conducive environment in your mind for the wisdom to be able to function. So this is one. It's not about the degree, even a slight degree also, it cannot exist at the same moment with the wisdom. So this is very important. Why we need the wisdom? So you have to, because if you want to solve any problem, you have to deal with it. You have to identify the problem precisely. Then you have to identify the cause of a problem precisely. If you don't identify the problem precisely and the cause of a problem precisely, you cannot find the method precisely. Yes. But that's why I have to go stage by stage, you see. If I tell wisdom, suddenly I jump up and talk about wisdom, people will be more difficult to understand. I have to create an environment suitable for wisdom to operate, right or not? You see, this is very important. If you want to solve a problem, first of all, your wisdom might arise first, you know, rather than other. You see, this is important. If your wisdom cannot arise, you know, if you all the time you want other people's, but other people's are wise, but it has nothing to do with you solving your problem. You see? So, this is quite important, you know. So, so only when you are calm and you are clearly cool, then we can identify, we can work according to methodology. For example, if you talk about wife, you know, you have to deal with your wife, then the mutual understanding is very important. You need to understand each other. It's not about other people, how they look at you. It's more about how you understand each other. So if you are not calm, a lot of emotional get worked up, then if you talk to whoever you talk to, the person always feel not understood. So when a two person, let's say husband and wife especially, if they feel you don't understand me, a lot of family problems happen. Why discussion doesn't work? Why sharing doesn't work? Because they are not in a position to listen properly. So there's no effective communication. When you have no effective communication, then how to solve a problem? You see, effective communication is important now as in this case, you need to understand problem, causes of problem. You need to precisely understand what are the goals you want, you know, and what are the methods you want to employ to solve it. So I would advise, I don't think this one can be done in 10 minutes time, I give you the answer to solve it. I don't think it is that easy. Because first I always have to create a condition that both sides, you know, if you both sides come to me for counseling, I can tell you, and calmly, and if you follow the rule of the Buddha, I can tell you how to find the answer for it. But if you have your mind is not open for any Dharma to operate, then I don't see how we can help. We can only help when the environment for Dharma to operate are there. When the Dharma environment for Dharma to operate is not there, I don't see how you can apply Dharma. You see, you have to create a condition for the Dharma to work out. So it takes some time. So first of all, if you want to overcome your problem, any problem, family problem, organization problem, national problem, international problem. Always we have to create the condition for it. So for example, in our organization, we will stop the meeting if it is not conducive for the meeting. So I did it once and never again. And they never repeat the mistake again. I only did it once. Because just when one of the members got emotional, out of the love for the organization, out of the love, because there's so much attachment that I want the organization to be so good. So I want it to work according to my idea. So because of that, There's no mutual communication. I say, no, stop. Let's stop the meeting and meditate for a while. For 20 minutes, we meditate metta meditation. I guided, do a guided meditation for metta. After 20 minutes, then everyone calm down and we discuss and become clear. The whole issue became very clear to everybody. So, no point having a heated argument or heated discussion in the meeting. I never want a meeting to be like that. I just tell them, no, this is not a meeting. A meeting is a place for wisdom to function. Everybody's wisdom to function. So when somebody get emotional or a group get emotional, we have to stop the communication. No point continue to communicate with each other. No point. You cannot communicate effectively when you are emotional, when your mind is closed. You cannot. So that's very important. It's not that Dharma doesn't work in our life to produce happiness. It is that, do we present, put our mind in the position that Dharma can function? You see, Dharma has a certain setting to function. You see, you don't create the conducive environment, the Dharma cannot function. Just like you want to, you know, you plant a durian, you plant a plant, anything. If you don't create a conducive atmosphere for the plant to grow, the plant will never grow. Durian needs certain requirement. The papaya tree needs certain requirement. Similarly, Dharma also needs certain requirement. So for Dharma to work in our life, we must present our mind in such a way that Dharma can function. So if you want wisdom to function in your life, you must present your mind, prepare it in such a way that you must know what obstruct wisdom and what support wisdom. You must know. After this, you have to learn. So to solve any problem in life, any problem. So, for example, in case of 2 persons, you know, family members or whatever, then you have to understand what are the relevant factors for this problem to be solved. It involves 2 persons. Yeah, it may involve other people. Maybe, but the 2 persons are the most important. They are people. So, then for the 2 persons to solve the problem, first 2 persons must equally understand the problem, at least as equal as possible. The same, they have understanding of the whole issue. So what we do in the organization, for example, in our place, before we, 2008, when we started to sit down, I know this is very important to achieve common understanding. I brought everyone to the Gunung Gading in Kuching, and we have a night talk to the committee. That night, we have a brainstorming session. We have a brainstorming session, and I talk, and we say, what is your wish in your life? I ask everybody, what is your wish in your life? What do you want in your life? So I want everyone to talk about their goal. I say, you must have a goal in your life. Some people say, oh, I want to be Arahan. Some people say, no, no, Arahan is too difficult for me. Sotapan is enough. Some people say, no, not even Sotapan. I want happiness only. Some people say, I want good health or whatever. But eventually, people start to identify what they want in their life. Happiness. They want to be happy. Everyone wants to be happy. Nobody wants suffering. Right or not? You know, you want a good health, also for happiness. Some people say, I want to make a lot of money. This is not wrong. You cannot say Buddhists don't like money. What is wrong with money? If you have a lot of money, good. You can do a lot of good work. Why? What's wrong with money? Why should we blame money? No. Okay. But, and then we make everyone try to understand. You want money. What happens if you got money and you spend all your time for money and you lose your health? At that time, do you feel happy? No. Then they say, oh yes, I actually want happiness, but I want money for happiness. Okay, that's fair. You see, if you think money is your final goal, then you may lose yourself. But if you may lose yourself in your search, you see. But if you understand, oh, I want the money as a means to achieve my happiness. Yes, no money is very, very difficult. If your son, your children get sick, you have no money to give proper health care. It is painful. If your beloved ones get sick, your father, mother, you know, you cannot send them to proper doctor and good medical care, you suffer. You won't feel happy. So you need money. You cannot say you don't need money. But if you understand, oh, I want money for happiness. That's very clear. I want money. So you know how to use money for your happiness. Instead of being a slave of money, you will be a master of money. So anything. So I say health also the same. Then people realize they want health for happiness. They want money, wealth for happiness. They want good relationship for happiness. They want the organization for happiness. Why? I say, same. You want this? We are coming together as an organized body. We are the members of this society, Buddhist society. Why? For happiness also, right? You hope this Buddhist society provide you something that to achieve some happiness. Right? I ask them, yes. Okay, then they identify. So, make sure we know. We want happiness eventually. But we use this for happiness. We use that for happiness. Same. You know? So, for the Chinese family, I say, oh, they like, our fathers, they like to have many children, you know? Or our grandfather, they like to have many grandchildren, you know? Why? Because they feel secure. You know, they feel secure. When they have a lot of children, these children will take care when I get old. So they feel secure, you see. And they are happy seeing a lot of children. So this family give them happiness. So eventually they want happiness. Some people say, oh, now the law doesn't allow, you know. If the law allow, I want to have many wives, you know. I find many wives happiness. Yes, they think they're happiness, you see, by having many wives. You see or not? But what happens if you have a lot of young wives and one day you get old, you know? Then how? All your wives want something from you. Will you be happy? They say, no, I will be very difficult, you know, I will be pressure, I have to satisfy every wife, you know? It's not easy. Then they say, oh, no, it may not be happy, you see? If you are rich, you can feed everybody, okay, fine. If you cannot feed them, you know, having many wives can be a burden, you know, can be a big problem. So same. So whatever discussion, when we discuss peacefully, calmly, and check in everybody, eventually we realize everyone want happiness. Then I ask a second question. Yeah? I ask them the second question. We go one round. Everyone has answer to achieve understanding. So everyone start to realize eventually they ask for life in their life. Actually, final goal is always boils down to happiness. Then I ask them the question, what have you done to achieve this happiness in your life? You know, some are 40 years old, some 20 over years old, some 30 years old. So I say, what have you done since you were born until now? What have you done for this happiness? Like, for example, health, wealth, whatever. Have you done anything for your health? Exercise, regular exercise to maintain it, and yoga or tai chi or anything, or wealth, or spiritual gain, or straight training, spiritual achievement. What have you done? So everyone answered. Then they realize they have done very little. You know, very little. Okay. Then I ask everyone the third question. Now, what do you want to achieve? You know? Now you know you have done this. You know this is what you want. You know you have done only this. What would you want to do in future to come up to this? Because you know what you have done this one is not enough. You have a high goal. You have a high demand. But you only put in so little input. So definitely it's not fair. It's not true. It won't work. So what else you want to come up to here? What do you want to do? That everyone's become more sensible, you see. They become more practical. Oh, yes, I want so much happiness, but I've done only these little things, you know. So then they commit themselves, to themselves. They say, oh, I want to devote. Some people say, no, I want to earn more money quickly so that I can retire quickly. You know, some people say like that, I want to earn money, I plan 5 years, I want to earn quickly, so after that I can retire, after 5 years, I want to go and meditate, after I have enough money for my children to go to universities. Okay, it's fair, this is also one way, you know, we respect each other's way. Everyone can have their way, but I want you to come up with something. You cannot have a goal without making effort. You must make right effort. That effort may be the best effort, or most efficient effort, or maybe less efficient effort, but at least something. You cannot have nothing and aim high. You cannot. So I want everyone to say something. I don't criticize everybody's method. You know? But I want everyone to have some method to achieve whatever they want in their life. So everyone say, understand. Then I ask them the last question, the fourth question. But this fourth question, I don't discuss. I just ask them, now go back, now it's late, 12 o'clock already. Go and, go and think about it, contemplate on it. Now, what do you think we should do in this organization? Now this organization is ours, it's in our hand, we are the leaders. We can shape it, we can organize it in whatever way we want, right or not? So, how can we organize our organization in such a way that we, all our goals are rightful goals? You know, not a single person have a goal which is bad. Everyone's goal is good. Whether the person will go for arhanship or sotapan or just want simple happiness or wealth or health. But whatever it is, everyone's goal is not wrong in the Dharma. It's not wrong. So if that's the case, how can we organize our organization in such a way that each of us can fulfill our goal? And can at least this organization can help to contribute to my achievement of my goal. Think about it. How can we organize ourselves in such a way that not one person get everything he wants and the rest don't get? Is it possible to organize ourselves in such a way that everyone also gets something, you know, something out of this organization? It is no point you come to join an organization and defeat our life goal. You see or not? The organization should contribute. But how the organization can be helpful to us? Since we are the one who organize it, we must organize it in such a way that it contribute, it serve us. We should not plan something that doesn't serve us. You know, it is tool. This organization is a tool for our life. So I throw this question to everybody and I told everyone to go to sleep. So like that. So this is, but after that, whenever we have a discussion, because everyone got quite a clear picture of what we want already, and a common understanding, then we got a very good brotherhood and friendship. And whenever we do, it's not always your wish against my wish already. You see, in a lot of human relationship, it is always, you follow my wish or I follow your wish. It is between a choice between your wish or my wish. And very often it's false choice. It's false choice. It's not necessary that you always have to give up one for another. Not necessary. But people, because of the limitation of their thought, they always believe that, you know, you have to give up your personal pursuit or your goal to satisfy me so that I'm happy. So it becomes a zero-sum game. You know what is zero-sum game? When you have, in order to have five, plus five, there must be a negative five. For example, gambling. Gambling is a zero-sum game. Is it or not? If you win $5, some people must lose $5. That's a zero-sum game. All boils down to zero. But in life, it's not always like that. In most of the cases, we can have a win-win situation. Okay? What is your wish in your life? What is your wish in your life? And what is my wish? Is it actually my wish and your wish contradict? According to that meeting 2008, I realized that not a single of our wish contradict each other. So for that reason, I felt very confident that I could lead this group. Because this group, I don't see anybody's wish contradict each other. So all I need to do is just organize everybody in such a way that, you know, so all the wish can merge and can help support each other. Suppose if somebody's wish is, well, my wish is to I get all the name and fame from this organization. And the other person's wish is, I want purity and purification and good atmosphere for purification. I tell you, it contradicts. Because the person's for selfish desire for name and fame, definitely the intention, the mind start with loba, greed. So such a mind and the pure mind, they are going in this separate direction. So how can they conquer? They cannot conquer. So, but the good thing is that everyone's wish is for happiness. I said, then nothing to worry. It's just a different level of happiness only. Some is Arhan's happiness, some is Sotapan's happiness, some is ordinary, just peaceful. I want a peaceful life. Or pure happiness, free from harm and danger. Okay, fair. I don't see why these different people contradict each other. You see, when people contradict, what will happen? Dirty tactics will happen. I try to twist and turn. I try to make you compromise to me, to satisfy me. This is what I call dirty tactics. What are dirty tactics? Tactics are things which the input are unwholesome. When the input are unwholesome, then the result won't be good. What are skillful means? Skillful means which the input are wholesome. You see, it is not wrong to use strategies for our goal. If our method, our intention, our process are all positive, wholesome inputs, no unwholesome thing there, then no need to worry about skillful means. This is not sotuan. This is not dirty tricks. This is wholesome, pure. Intention also good, the method also good. You are not depriving other people of anything. That is okay. But when tactics happen there's a time human relationship become very sophisticated. I care about my ego, myself, and you care about your happiness. I care about my happiness only. When two person or group of people, they relate to each other, they don't care about each other's deep wish, they can never be in concord with each other. They can never be in harmony, in good relationship with each other. This thing never happened. It's either who is more superior and who dominate another. That's all. Who is more powerful and to dominate another. Then you don't find a sincere, genuine relationship. So I don't want this thing to happen in Tusita, in our organization. I don't want. If it were to be that case, I don't want to lead. Why should I lead the messy people? I don't want to lead messy people. I want to lead genuine, sincere, honest, happy people. So I told them, now I see the hope. Because all of us, we don't see anything fundamental which conflict. The fundamental things, our aim, our goal are good. We all want happiness. It is not wrong for wanting happiness. You see, the Buddha came to the world to teach, to help to overcome suffering, to find the true happiness. So what is wrong about finding happiness? The only thing is now, it's easier to solve. Once you have the fundamentals correct, that's easier to solve. It's the method only. How we organize ourselves in such a way that you will achieve your happiness, I will achieve my happiness. You know, we will make the organization helpful for your aim and for my aim. So this is easier. And then after that, because we have set a very good foundation in our human relationship, we start with a genuine heart-to-heart sharing and mutual understanding of what each other wants. Then, from that time onwards, we could proceed with a systematic way to find the answer together. You see, it's not I give the answer, I dictate the answer to you. If I dictate the answer to you, you may not be happy because we don't find in the world two minds exactly conquer each other, exactly the same. No. Unless you're Buddha and the Buddha. But even the Buddha and the Buddha, their mind agree, but their karma also different. Because of the karma and parami different, they may respond differently to situations. You see? So, it is very important. So we have to go step by step to apply our wisdom step by step. We set the foundation correct. Then only we build a high-rise story building, you see. So from that time onwards, we always have a heart-to-heart talk. And we make sure we don't disrupt our communication by factors which can disrupt our operation of wisdom. Emotions, anger, greed, any kind of defilements. We don't let tactics tactics, dirty tactics come into our relationship. We only apply skillful means. So we are very clear. But how to do it? It is not easy. It requires a lot of courage. It requires a lot of sincerity to recognize our own weakness and our own faults. And the standard is very simple. The standard is, according to Abhidhamma, what are wholesome mental states and what are unwholesome mental states? We don't allow any unwholesome states. We have to be honest. So you don't find my students coming to me and complain about any events or any situations with defilements. If they have defilements, they dare not come to approach me. They will solve their defilements unconditionally. Unconditionally. Because why? If you say, if you solve the problem for me, I will be free from problem. I say, sorry. In this world, such a beautiful thing rarely happen to us. Just like the girl who came to me in 2008. She said, Bande, can you help me to find, get back my boyfriend to me? He believed that as a Bante, I must be very special, you know. Maybe I know how to do the who or whatever, you know. No, so they make her boyfriend love her again. I say, this is not. But I, as a monk, I don't promote relationship, you know. Monk don't go and promote and make a man and woman match with each other. We don't do that, you know. We don't do that. But I can teach you the natural laws so that you can find answer for yourself. I don't give you the answer. How can I ask you to make yourself more attractive, you know, to your... No. But I told her a little hints. I say, men usually don't like emotional women. Frankly speaking, a little troublesome. We don't enjoy that, you know, we don't buy that. Because life nowadays is too busy. Life is too busy. You just have a lot of men. You know, unless that man has nothing else to do every day, go and chase after, play around the Indian dance, you know. You know. Otherwise, we have a lot of work to do. Wow, can. So, and, you know, if you're all the time gloomy and crying and you're tearful face, once a while you cry, the boy may still say, well, you look beautiful when you cry. Yes, once a while. It's not true. It's not true. But if you keep crying all the time, you see what happened? You won't be loving. You want people to love you. You must be lovely. You must be lovely. And you must be loving. If you are not loving and you are not lovely, and you want to make people love you, it doesn't work. It's not a cause and effect. So I say, so if you, I actually told her very bluntly, I said, honestly speaking, if I were to be your boyfriend, I would be a bit afraid because if you cry like that, I will be very afraid, you know. You know. So I say, you should recover and if you are bright and 阳光, sunshine, full of sunshine in your mind, then there's a chance that sometimes, you know, you become very lovely and boys will love you. I don't say exactly you pull back on boyfriend or not. But if you are gloomy, down, low mind, negativity, you speak with so much negative, you know, negative energy, you know, you won't be attractive, you know. As I told her. But I thought I said enough already. I just go by borderline. See. I say a bit more, I will be against the precepts. You know, I will be doing matchmaking work, you know. So I told the line very carefully. But she didn't understand. She was so emotional that she could not understand the thing, what I said. She was so emotional, anything cannot enter her mind. So, she just insisted, she said, if he came back to me, if he comes back to me, everything will be alright. Then it's a wrong cause and effect, you see. You are saying that if the boy come back to you, you will be lovely. But it's not like that. It's not like that. You have to be lovely first in order to be loved, you see. If you are not lovely, how you will be loved? So like that. So you have to know the cause and effect. You have to solve the life problem. Any life problem, you have to know what are the causes and effect, you see. You need to know. So you have to calmly know it. So I told everybody, if you want to solve any problem, you have to solve it in the proper way. So we have to have a meeting, we have to apply our wisdom, we have to have love for each other. Then there's a chance that we can solve our problem. So we talk to each other peacefully, calmly, and then be a nice person, be a good person. Then we can understand each other. You see, most people, they don't care about understanding another person. You see, they want people to understand them. This is the problem in the world. You see, you don't understand me. But why not you ask the question, do I really understand you? People also want to be understood. You see? So if we sincerely lend an ear and to other people, and then don't be too eager to say too much, and have a listening ear and listen and try to understand. Before you solve problem, the first thing is always understanding problem. If you don't understand problem and you want to solve a problem, it's not never possible. That's why the Buddha started with the noble truth of suffering. First, you want to solve suffering, understand suffering first. People suffer because they don't understand suffering. The world suffers because they don't understand suffering. First, understand what is the true nature of suffering. Understand identifying precisely. Then secondly, understand the origin of the suffering. What actually make me suffer? Whenever we suffer, I tell you, especially mental suffering. If it is physical suffering, I say, well, this is maybe karma. Karma made the person, the terrorist, come and bomb my house and I got the bomb, you know. I lost my thing, my hand. So, of course, it is physical suffering. You know, this is one thing. But whenever we have mental suffering, external, maybe, there may be external reasons. Let me tell you, according to the Buddha's teaching, it is not possible that you don't have an internal reason to get the mental suffering. It's not possible. Not possible. There must be an internal reason for mental suffering. For sure. 100%. If you can do away with internal cause of suffering, then no external cause of suffering can actually hurt you and can cause suffering to you. Well, this is a big topic. Huh? If I want to continue, I can speak until 12 o'clock. I'm afraid you can't take it. I can take it. No, when I speak Dharma, I get very energetic. But I'm afraid you don't have a time to pay attention to this. You know, and you cannot sustain attention. But anyway, there must be an internal reason that make us suffer. So, if there is a cause of suffering internally and there's a cause of suffering externally, then what should we do? If you want to do it properly, which is easier to master? Is it easier to master external factor or internal factor? Yes. But even the internal is difficult, but external is even more difficult. You see, can we control our mind? Not easy, you see. When you pay attention to your breath, it's not easy. So what more to say, you want to control another person's mind and make that person's mind twist and turn and convert it to in a way that satisfy your wish. You can't even convert your mind and change your mind to satisfy your wish. You tell yourself, I don't want to think like that. Can you? If I tell you there are people who think in another way and feel very happy, why not you think like that? You say, no, I cannot think like that. Right or not? Very often, I can tell you, in given the same situation, different people will think differently. But you cannot copy the way people think. It's not easy. Even though I assure you, if you can think like that, you will be very happy. But you cannot do it. Why? Because of our past conditioning. If we understand this past conditioning, we have a lot of compassion for people when they behave in a way against our wish, against our expectation. We have a lot of understanding for people. We have a lot of forgiveness for people. And that is the key for solution to solve a lot of life problems. If we don't have an understanding mind for people and for ourselves, then I don't see how wisdom can operate, and I don't see how we can solve a lot of life problems. This we must come first. So we have to have a lot of understanding for yourself and for other people, knowing that to change my mind, to think like a saint it's so difficult. The saint won't suffer. But if I tell you how the saint would think, you say, no, this is the saint. I'm not the saint. I'm a normal worldling. I'm not a Buddha. Okay, so it is difficult, right? So similarly, other people, they also have their difficulty to control their mind. And if it will be even difficult to control their mind to please our wish. You see, there's always different way of right. What is right, you see? What is right for us may not be right for the Arahants, and may not be right for the Buddha. Similarly, what is right for me may not be right for another person. Because we all have a different background, different conditioning. That is why in any human relationship, in any organization, the ability to understand each other is so important. The process, the system to understand each other, to help us to understand each other is so important. So if the process is wrong, the method is wrong, the attitude is wrong, there's no way to understand each other. There's no way to proceed to further, to how to bring out the best collective wisdom. So that's why we need to have this. We have to train this. That's why I don't put anybody who have not gone through Dharma leadership in leading position in our organization. Now, if they want to become committee or anything, they must go through the training of Dharma leadership so that they know, they have a common understanding how we are going to work together so that the best part of us can come out in our organization. Likewise, for a family, for any two persons or three persons, as long as two persons or more than two persons, Dharma leadership is involved. Yes, it's involved. Because Dharma leadership involves more than one person, the application of Dharma more than one person. This is difficult. If you apply the Dharma to conquer yourself, it's already difficult. What more to say? You have to apply the Dharma in a way that affects your the way you conduct and then the way you relate to another person. That is even more difficult. One mind is already difficult. Two different minds is more difficult. And men and women is even more difficult. Some come from Venus, some from Mars. You know? So it's very difficult. I can tell you, I find very difficult to understand women. Except my mother, you know. My mother is simple, you know. A bit manly type of. Not easy. We don't understand. Really. But now I have an understanding power without understanding. You know how I always understand? So even if I don't know why she behave like that exactly, but I have a compassion, there must be a reason because of hormone or whatever reason, you know. So, never mind, you know. At least I don't understand exactly the behavior of this person, but I have a loving heart. Understanding my never mind. She must have a reason, you know. She cry out of no reason. Sometimes I just don't understand why my student just cry out of nowhere. I'm explaining about other people and about this incident, about something bright and, you know, very sunshine, sunny things. Then suddenly she cry just out of no nothing. I just don't understand. I'm talking about sunny things. I thought it's very bright. But you cry. Then she, I think of something, you know, don't understand. So that's why we have to be understand. Let those come from Mars understand those who come from Venus, and those come from Venus understand those who come from Mars. Who come from Mars? Men or women? Men are from Mars, and women come from Venus. Okay, let somebody say it. You know. So whatever it is, you know. So this is very important. So once we have a basic attitude, the correct attitude to build up understanding, to understand the issue, then first we understand the problem, the suffering, what is your suffering and what is my suffering. Understand purely. So in this case, I have a certain rules for it. When we have a meeting, we discuss, we make sure we don't criticize at the stage of brainstorming or sharing information stage. Nobody is supposed to criticize another. Right or wrong is another issue. Let the person speak to the best of his satisfaction and no comment. You must not comment on it. Let the person speak to his satisfaction and just jot down. I call it brainstorming stage or information stage or sharing of facts and data stage. So right or wrong is another thing. Logical or not logic is another issue. But all must come put on the table. let everyone can see, so transparent. So you will see the same thing as I see. So I will share my facts and data, and you will share your facts and data about everything relevant. So we all see the same thing. You know, is there anything miss out? No. Everything is seen. Then we come to the second stage. I will look at the facts and data this way. You look at it another way. Okay? Is there a contradicting point? Can we try to see all the negative? We should invite other people to say the negative thing about what we present. I want, on major issues, I want my team members to do it. If you think you are right, you must have the guts to listen to all the opposite opinions and thinking about what you say. If you don't have that courage, forget about what you say. Go back. Don't talk about your view and your suggestion, your opinion is not credible. It's not worth consideration. If you are real about it, you think so confident about it, you should invite other people to criticize you, to share, to say all the negative things about it. And no rebuttal at this stage. You must be gentleman enough, magnanimous enough to listen to all the negative things, all the opposite opinions. So that you hear it all. And we want everyone to hear it all. Okay, both sides. Then after that, you come to the third stage, decision-making stage. Okay, now can we harmonize? Okay, now you know everything about the pros and cons. I also know everything about pros and cons. So we got all the same facts and data. Now it is just the last stage left. Given our difference in wisdom and given the same facts and data, can we come to a same conclusion or not? Let's talk about it. Be fair to each other. No one is going to dominate and oppress another. Be fair. We talk sense. We talk reason. Apply that. Okay. Now you make a decision. Okay. Now we understand each other. So I look at it this way. Given these facts and data, I would decide this way. Then the other one will decide another way. So this, up to this stage, what should we do if we still have differences? Then I will do what our brothers here proposed just now. Let other people contribute. Let, they may not be relevant people. Let them contribute. But who should contribute? Should you ask the robber to contribute? Should you ask the person who always suffers, who can't even manage his own personal affairs, always mess up his life, to contribute to improve on your ideas or your thinking or to help you in decision making? Definitely not, right? The Buddha never asks us to get the majority or everybody's opinion. No. The Buddha said the wise, look at the wise. Why? Why we care so much about the wise rather than majority or anything? Because the wise, you consider things based on natural law, based on natural law and reality and phenomena. Natural law is just like gravity, you know. If you go against it, you fall down and you die. It's not because of majority deny the existence of gravity, then gravity is no more there. No, you have a million, 10 millions of people, 1 billion of people saying that, no, now there's no more gravity. Still you jump down, everyone die the same. You jump down the cliff, you die. So, for that reason, the Buddha wants us the way to get out of suffering, to free from suffering, to find happiness, must be in accordance to natural law, rather than in accordance to the majority. Well, if the majority have got answers, they would be free from suffering already. But only the Buddha and the wise one got the answers. So, we must find, then who is wise? Can you read other people's mind? You don't. But at least you know what is the manifestation of wisdom. Wisdom manifests in a way of happiness, of peace. You see or not? If your unwise mind always cause suffering to themselves, even though they want happiness, what they do is always causing suffering to themselves. This is unwise. So you don't go for a miserable person for advice. No. We go for people who are peaceful, happy, who can manage himself very well, very orderly, then we go for such people for advice and try to get advice at that. So that means that we recognize that our wisdom may not be the best. This is humility. If you don't have this humility, you won't be able to invoke the wisdom of the wise. You must have the humility that some people live better life than myself. You see, this person is happier, more peaceful, more balanced, more, you know, respectable, and more stable. So such a person, he may be able to handle this issue, this problem, better than I do. And this you must have. Otherwise, if you don't have humility, nobody wants to help you. Nobody can help you. Who wants to help a person who is so proud and so adamant about his own rightness? You know, I'm right. I don't need to change. I have nothing to be advised. I don't need any advice from anybody. Who is going to advise such a person? A wise man won't go and advise a person who is so convinced with his own wisdom and yet suffer. You cannot be wise and suffering at the same time. If you suffer, some kind of weakness must be in the mind. If you are very wise, wise person don't suffer. Let me tell you. So we must have the humility. Oh, let me let the wise people help me out of this problem. Okay, you must have a genuine sincerity to invite help. So after that, maybe with the input of the wise person, the wisdom, then you can see, both sides also can see the problem better and clearer. Then, can you come to the same agreement? Maybe yes and maybe no. Because sometimes when we make decisions, it's not always based on reason, right? Sometimes you have some kind of emotional knot. Your feeling just cannot take it. Even though you can think coolly, but your feeling cannot take it. Still, you may not agree. So when that happens, what should we do? There's one principle you find throughout the Buddha's life. There's one principle you can derive from the Buddha's example of dealing with life problem or challenges or any difficulty. He will solve it with a common approach. You can derive this principle from the Buddha's life experience. Action or inaction, always make sure things get better and not worse. It need not be action and it need not be inaction. It can be action and it can be inaction. You see, there's two ways we can act. Either we act or we don't act. You see, no? But whether we act or we don't act, we act or not act in a way that make things better. That means there's a choice. Between options, you try to choose the best options. But sometimes in life, this is not the choice you get. Is it? In life, is very often you don't have a chance to choose between better and best or bad or good. No. Sometimes it's a choice of bad and worse. Right or not? So when that happens, don't choose the worst one. Choose what is minimum pain, minimum cost. That's all you can do in life. Then if you can make such a decision in your life, that's the best. That's the best. So, Dharma doesn't always give you, ensure you a beautiful answer. Because in our life, not only what we do matters, what we did also matters. In the past also matters to produce a result. So if we have a wise way to apply our wisdom and to come to understanding of each other, of things, and then understanding of the facts and data, and then we have an understanding of what we want, everything, all the systematic decision you have, process you've gone through, then you have to make a choice and make sure things are better. If not, at least not worse. And that's the best you can do in life already. Don't try to crave for a result in life that everything will be according to my wish. If you crave like that, I tell you, you don't find answer anywhere, not in the Dharma, not outside the Dharma world. You only mess things up. If we can systematically, correctly put in the right input, that's the best we can already. And if still things are not desirable, accept it. That's all we have to tolerate. But we are not talking about tolerance or patience blindly without making effort. If you can make effort, you have to make the right effort. That's what we say. We talk about Dharma leadership. We talk about a system to come into common understanding, mutual understanding. We have to, these are all about right effort. But once you have exhausted all your right effort, and whatever left for you, accept it. The best, the better one, or at least not the worst one. Okay? So there's a lot more to talk about how to apply Dharma in our real life, but because of the time, I think I should stop here. I have no problem if I'm willing to help anybody, you know, but you must put yourself in a position that to be helped. Because I cannot help by force, I cannot help by brute force or anything, I can only help by speech, Dharma, and share my wisdom and knowledge with you. But you must put yourself in a position that, you know, words count. You put yourself in a position that words don't count, words cannot be transmitted effectively, then I don't see how we can help each other. So we help the true wisdom are transmitted through language and through words, and make sure words can be, we can communicate in an effective manner. But anyway, there's time limit. I can't go further. I actually there's a lot more to talk about patience, but now we cannot finish our talk on patience. But anyway, I hope the Buddha's methodology of Four Noble Truths, you always bear in mind the two sets of cause and effect, and apply that in any aspect of your life. And if you apply it correctly, then you can practice patience correctly. I want to talk about how to apply patience. There's situations where you fail to apply patience. I want to talk about what are the causes which will contribute for patience, you know. Actually, but today, it's good. We come up with something maybe more relevant to your life. So I think it is also good. I welcome it. I appreciate, I thank our brother, and we're being so frank with us. And it's good. He's very frank. Actually, frankness is the one way you bravely face any problem. It's always the beginning of solving problem. You see, people who hide their problems, it can be even more problematic. I don't see how sometimes people are too, you know, they care too much about face, they want to hide their problem. I don't find how we can help people. But people who are outspoken and open and genuine and frank and, you know, then I find that it is possible. But make sure you are in a position, you know, to solve it. And understanding is first must come. Understanding of the problem, understanding of the origin of the problem, you must identify precisely. I think it's not easy to understand, identify origin of the problem precisely. Most of the time when people identify problem, you say, well, because of this person, I get this. Because of this, I get this. Because of this, I get this. But seldom we find people are so courageous and so brave that they dare to look inside and say, yes, I also have this cause of problem. So I always want my students and my devotees to work on yourself first. Because if everyone wants to work on others first, they never end. You have to work on ourselves first and solve our cause of problem, then it is easier to work together. If you don't work on ourselves, then it's a problem. You know? So this is what I think. We have to come up to it. Anyway, time is up. We still sharing our merits. Okay. Idang me punyang asavakaya wahang hotu. Idang me punyang nibbanasa pachayo hotu. Mama punya bagang Sabba sattanam bhajemi te sabbe me samam punya bhagam labantu
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.